Joining us now, I saw him last night. Didn't get to talk to him, but he's always the tallest man in the room, or at least one of the tallest, and one of my favorites, Senator Tom Cotton from the great state of Arkansas. Senator Cotton, how are you? Good to talk to you.
Hey, Laura. It's good to be on with you as well. It's good to see you last night. I'm sorry I didn't get a chance to talk, but we get a chance to talk now for all of your listeners.
Right.
And Larry Arn is a dear old friend of mine as well. I'm glad you're doing that.
Oh, he's awesome. Just love him to death.
A native Arkansan.
That's right. Oh, my gosh. That's right. I totally forgot. Let's talk about where we are with this North Korean problem, the conversation. You heard Donald Trump in an interview yesterday talk about potentially meeting with Kim Jong-un, which, you know, everybody went nuts about. And I have to say, look, if I heard Barack Obama say, you know, I think I'd be honored to meet with him. I'd be going after Barack Obama today if he said that. But what could be going on here? I mean, I made a point last night on Special Report that we've pretty much tried, you know, Most of what the elites have told us to do with North Korea, this cat and mouse game with them, and nothing's worked. So maybe Trump is trying to try his own psychology there with the Cabbage Patch president. Who knows?
Well, Laura, for 25 years, you're right that we've had a failed North Korea policy, because the policy has basically been to kick the can down the road through Clinton, Bush, and Obama administrations. Now, there might have been a time when that was the best of a bunch of bad options, but we run out of road to kick the can down. That's what President Obama made clear to then-President-elect Trump in the transition, that this might be the most immediate crisis we face. You know, is it a crisis that's going to happen tomorrow or next week or next month in terms of North Korea being able to strike the continental United States with a nuclear weapon? No, but it is something that is going to happen on Donald Trump's watch, and that's why he's committed to stopping that outcome. I don't think the American people are willing to live in a world where Kim Jong-un has an intercontinental missile with a nuclear warhead that can strike the United States. Now, as you say, we've had a lot of different approaches to North Korea, and they've failed in almost every way. I think Donald Trump and Secretary of State Tillerson are doing a very good job of trying to bring more pressure to bear on North Korea, and particularly trying to convince China once and for all that it's not in their interest to have a nuclearized North Korea and the threat that poses to the United States. Ultimately, if North Korea agrees to freeze its missile program, its nuclear program, you can imagine conditions in which Donald Trump could seal a final deal, much the way Ronald Reagan did in his second term once Gorbachev came to office and we had met
face to face, in other words.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and, you know, in the 1980s, George Shultz, the Secretary of State, and Ronald Reagan received criticism for continuing Shultz's diplomacy with Soviet leadership, and then for Reagan for going to summits in Geneva and Reykjavik and so forth. But because they had laid the groundwork in the early days of the Reagan administration of meeting Soviet aggression with force and pressure in places like Afghanistan or with intermediate nuclear forces in Europe, or fighting back in Central America, they were able to sit down in those negotiations with the upper hand, putting pressure on our adversary to make concessions to us, not the other way around.
Well, I think that, again, the reaction to what the president says on this issue in particular and the Civil War, I mean, the media prove once again how totally out of touch and biased they are against him. They're actually now on Morning Joe, and you've heard little dribs and drabs of this over the last month or so. They're now trying to make the case that Donald Trump has dementia. They're actually saying that, and beyond intimating it, they're saying it. They're saying, well, my mother has dementia, and this is the way she talks. Does that surprise you that they've sunk this low, Senator Cotton?
Well, there's a lot of people in the media and the Democratic Party who still have not come to grips with the fact that the American people elected Donald Trump to shake up Washington. And the sooner they do so, the better off we'll all be as a country so we can try to solve some of those problems. I didn't see what you're talking about this morning. I'm more of a baseball highlight kind of guy.
Oh, good for you.
But it's better to, you know, critique a president for his policies and his decisions than try to put him on the couch and read his mind.
Speaking of the policies, you can imagine that a lot of my listeners are not happy with this continuing resolution. which funds the government for a short period of time. Again, we concede on Planned Parenthood, concede on no border wall, concede on H-2B visas, which brings in low-skilled workers into the United States. Issue after issue after issue, get a lot more money for defense, get some money for border enforcement, but a specific provision says no money can be used for the wall. Who won in this continuing resolution, and why are Republicans looking like they're caving on the major issues that Donald Trump campaigned on?
Yeah, Laura, so I certainly have some disappointment about this bill as well. I haven't yet decided whether I can vote for it or not. It's 1,700 pages, so we're obviously going through
it. That tells you what it is.
As you know, they don't hide the good things in 1,700 pages. They only hide the bad things. Of course, the press releases on Sunday didn't trumpet the fact that it once again uses a spending bill to expand the H-2B program, which hurts American wages and takes jobs from Americans through temporary guest workers, and is subject to a lot of abuses as well. That's just one example of the kind of provisions you've got to read
through. Well, how is that in there, Senator? How that's precisely what
We're
Donald Trump campaigned against. So how are we there?
And I'm trying to get to the bottom of that myself, Laura. I know yesterday Chuck Grassley and Dianne Feinstein, the senior Republican and Democrat on the Judiciary Committee, who have very different views on immigration, issued a joint statement saying that it was not appropriate to be in a spending bill and they want it removed before it passes the House. At a minimum, that should happen. We should not be making long-lasting immigration policy in a spending bill that's going to last 4 months and 3 weeks. There's other things in there that I have my reservations about. There are some good things, you know, an increase in defense spending. There is increases in border security, even though, as you say, it's only for technological advances, hiring, repairing existing wall, not building new wall. You know, there'll be time to do that in the future, but, you know, this is not the right way to spend the taxpayer dollars, to have these big bills that fund the entire government and take a lot of the ability to allocate your tax dollars wisely out of the hands of your elected representatives.
It seems to me, just in looking at the size of the bill, these provisions, I mean, Planned Parenthood, I mean, when you have the House and the Senate and the presidency, and then you're going to go to the American people in 2018 and said, reelect us. If you're in the House of Representatives, your Senate seat is up. Reelect us because we funded Planned Parenthood. Reelect us because we made sure that the border wall wasn't built. Reelect us because, you know, maybe added more money to the debt. I don't know how you could sign this bill. I mean, obviously you have to do what you want, but given your principles, I don't see how any Republican who's a conservative, frankly, can agree to this. At some point, we have to stop the madness.
Yeah, and you know what's most galling to me, Laura, is a thing like the H-2B provisions.
Oh.
It's one thing to acknowledge that the Democrats, because of the Senate and the filibuster, have a veto over our pet projects. It's another thing, though, for us to keep scoring own goals. Whose vote are we getting because we're expanding a abusive guest worker program? I just don't understand who that is. Maybe the Democrats want it, but why are we giving that to them? That's not something that should be in a spending bill to begin with.
It's not, it had nothing to do with spending. But they just, the same thing. They just keep lumping more things into these bills. And it's like Republicans are taking, speaking of baseball, they're taking, let's say, an aluminum bat, a big old aluminum bat, and just smashing themselves in the face with it. and trying to chase the voters who just voted them and chase them with a bat. I mean, that's what it feels like to me. We're all being beaned. It's like bean ball. We're all being beaned with the ball. We're like puppet bat, and the Republicans are throwing balls at our head. And I think most people are just at the point where they're frustrated. Beyond it. I mean, you can hear my voice. I'm very frustrated about this.
Well, on occasion, maybe it looks like when the first baseman and the second baseman and the right fielder all converge on a pop fly and run into each other and drop the ball.
Yeah, that's another just depressing way of describing it. All right, so we have the North Korea situation. My other question to you, of course, is what's happening in Afghanistan and Iraq. We've lost three of our bravest over the last week, three more, two in Afghanistan, one, I believe, in Iraq. What's going on in Afghanistan? You know, I understand there's a rumor that McMaster wants to, you know, spend billions more in Afghanistan. He's given a big briefing on that, according to some sources. And what, 15, 16 years later, Senator Cotton, I know you know Afghanistan. What are we getting there?
Well, I'll say about Iraq in particular, the pace of the fighting has increased. And when that happens, you're going to take more casualties. We saw this in Iraq when I was there in 2006, and especially in the surge in 2007. But ultimately, it was successful because the pace of the fighting increased. Yeah, in Afghanistan, President Obama made very unwise decisions in terms of expanding our troop levels in 2009, but then immediately announcing that we withdraw them as well, sacrificing a lot of the gains that those troops would pursue. We have to realize that Afghanistan is not going to be, a Western-style constitutional democracy.
What are we doing there? Why are we there?
We're trying to ensure that it doesn't become what it was before 2001, which is a unfettered safe haven for Al Qaeda and now the
Islamic
State.
So we'll be there forever, then.
Present.
There's no way we're leaving Afghanistan. With 16 years later, the biggest superpower in the face of the earth still hasn't won the peace in Afghanistan.
We don't have to be there forever, and we wouldn't be there as long as we have been if President Obama hadn't made so many unwise decisions early.
Do you think it's a governable country as it is? You think Afghanistan, and you've been there. You think it's a governable country, and that it's worth spilling American blood there still, after all these years and all this money?
It's not. Well, it's like I said. It's never going to be Norway or Sweden, and that's not what our objective should be there. But what we should be worried about is the American blood that will be spilled on our own shores if it becomes once again what it was in the late 1990s and early 2000s, which is a safe haven for groups like Al Qaeda and ISIS that can launch mass casualty terrorist attacks against us. That doesn't require us to have 100,000 troops there on the ground for decades at a time. It does require probably some tough fighting in the months ahead now that the fighting season is here. It also requires us to take a somewhat different diplomatic approach in the region, I think, to help to get Pakistan in particular to start denying the safe havens to these groups and working with the other countries in the region, in particular India, to achieve that goal.
I think that the problem that people have with all of this, and I hear your arguments, is that Congress can't allocate $1 billion for a down payment on a wall, but they're willing to spend hundreds of billions of dollars in a remote area of the world that the Soviets couldn't win, that in 16 years we've lost so many of our bravest, spent trillion-plus dollars there, and we can't spend $1 billion on our own border, and we're worried about what's behind their borders. I mean, it is, for the regular people just following this, they can't make heads or tails of this. So I think the messaging on this is really bad, and it's been bad through, probably this is the third administration, which I don't think the American people really understand why we're still there. And, we should be in Africa by that analysis. I mean, a lot of bad stuff happened in Africa with Boko Haram, and, ISIS is in Africa, so maybe we should have a bigger presence there, too. But, there's a lot of places where people can launch attacks from. It takes, like, a couple apartment buildings and, some money. That's about what they need now. I'll let you close it out.
Well, we do have a lot of threats from all around the world, but Afghanistan remains the one place where we ejected Al-Qaeda from and where they have not yet returned to the ability to launch those kind of attacks against us. We can't have conventional forces deployed all around the world, Laura. You're certainly right. That's one reason why we work with local governments and their security services to try to stop those terrorist groups from taking root. That's one reason why we shouldn't make ill-advised decisions like President Obama did in 2011 when he overthrew the government in Libya and turned that into an ungoverned terrorist zone as well. But I, like every other American, wants to see American troops come home from Afghanistan. I don't want to see terrorists follow behind them, though.
Mm-hmm. Well, we certainly agree on that. And Senator Cotton, we look to you for your leadership and your clear analysis, and we really appreciate your commentary on the continuing resolution. And I'll just do self-diagnosis from now on. I'll just focus on my own diagnosis. And you were surrounded
than self-medication,
right? Exactly. And you were surrounded by all your fans last night, so I couldn't even break through. But I'm glad I got to talk to you today. You take care.
Good to talk to you.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. We'll take a break. Don't go away.
The Laura Ingraham Show.